We are rolling. I'm sitting here in Judson Memorial Church, one of my favorite buildings. It's around Washington Square in New York City. This is where you get your badges for CMJ, which is the College Music Journal Music Marathon Festival party that is and was. It's the last day. The sounds you hear in the background are people kind of cleaning up. You'll hear thumps and thuds as they fold tables and chairs. And I'm Bob Boylan. I'm sitting in this room with Emmy Black. Emmy works for Bar None Records. And we met after an NPR event the other night, Death Grips and Buick and Gace, yeah, and then Flying Lotus. And also the very first person I met when I walked into CMJ was Thor Slaughter. And Thor, you came up to me and said what?
Vote for me.
And I looked at you and said, oh, I'm not...
I'll never vote for someone I've never heard before.
Did I say that?
Something like that.
Yeah. And you have won in the past Best Music Director in the country?
Yeah, Music Director of the Year, and we'll never sell out this year.
I love that category, which is you'll never sell out, right?
2 years in a row now.
That's awesome. And you struck me as somebody magically in love with music. You work at KWVA in Eugene, Oregon, mm-hmm. is your station. And many people I met after I met you and told them your name, Thor Slaughter, said, I like his show. I listen to his show. So there are people out there. It's not just because you ask people for your votes. People actually like what you do, and so now I got to go back and do the same. So we're gathered because it's the last day of CMJ, and we've all seen so much music, and we just thought we'd do a wrap-up and talk about it. So has this been a good CMJ for you, Emmy?
Yeah, no, it absolutely was. I mean, I think I was more careful about which bands I was seeing, and it paid off.
So tell me about, like, one thing that knocked you out. Let's start with something.
I saw this band, Ghost Pal, actually. They made an epic album that's a rock opera, like Tommy or something. And they had a saxophone and all these people on stage, and they were playing in this like weird DIY space that was a loading dock in Bushwick. Oh. They really blew my mind.
So the song we just heard?
It's a song by Ghost Pal off of Nathan Jones' Dead. They're from Brooklyn. They're a great band. You should really...
Big sound?
Big sound. And also a lot of breakdowns and very epic. It's a journey. I'll take you on a journey. So.
Awesome. What you got, Mr. Thor?
All right. Well, I would say that one of the bands that really blew me out of the water, I saw Turbo Fruits at Pianos. And Turbo Fruits is a band from Nashville, sort of in the Nashville garage rock scene. I believe the main guy, Jonas, used to be in Be Your Own Pet. And they just came out with an album called Butter. And it was sort of a lackluster album for me. There was a lot of highlights, some really nice tracks that hadn't really heard from them, that type of sound before, a little bit country-tinged garage rock. But when I saw them live, they were just so muscular. And they sounded almost like a cracked-out Lynyrd Skynyrd. But there was something about it that was so authentic. They come in with this long, unkept hair. The bassist spilt beer all over the stage when he, like, was drinking a beer during a song. And they were so just authentic. But they
real
were
class
so...
act here at CMJ.
It was so on the money because I feel like every CMJ there's all these hype buzz bands that, you know, you go in and everyone's on their iPhones and they're tweeting, but this was just a balls to the wall amp right in your face. I mean, they just really pulled off the classic rock thing in such an authentic way that really impressed me. The standout track for me from Butter was Sweet Thing. It was released as a 7-inch as well as included on the record. I think it shows the sort of country-tinged, almost Rolling Stones-esque addition to their sound. Sweet Thing that I think is really nice is that it builds up a lot and it has these very big refrains, and when they played it live it was just so much noise. They're screaming at the top of their lungs, and it's a sort of love-torn garage rock song, you know, I miss my sweet thing, and everyone in the crowd was really starting. It was towards the end of the set, and so everyone, you know, who was, because when you go to CMJ you're seeing a million shows and so it's hard to really get into them. But by the end of Sweet Thing, the second chorus in the Sweet Thing, everyone was up and down. People were jumping. The room was packed. People couldn't get into a hallway. My head was banging the whole time, and I was in the front row losing it. And it was just a hell of a good time. He was doing jumps and kicks and stuff that weren't trying too hard. They were just natural jumps and kicks, you know, because you see a lot of fake jumps and kicks at CMJ. You know, people keep, people keep trying to muster up
the energy. We need a tumbler for fake jumps and kicks.
Yeah. So everyone had put the iPhones away at that point and was banging their head with me. So
that's great.
It's a great time.
It's funny because, Emmy, you mentioned like a rock opera thing, and you mentioned sort of a classic rocky sound. And I saw a band called Foxygen that sort of is in that mold too, although I must say that they take the music a little bit beyond classic rock, but the lead singer, when I walked into the room, the lead singer of this band reminded me of Mick Jagger.
That's the first thing I thought.
And then, like, I looked at his eyes and his hair, and he kind of looked a little like Tom Verlaine of Television. And then all those things were happening. There's so many moves and stylistically in his voice, it recall lots of people I've loved before, but it all felt new to me. Did you see him, Emmy?
I saw one song. I saw the end of the set, and I was like, oh, I really hope they're playing another one, and then I missed it.
Well, I was going to go back for a second, Foxygen, which I don't usually do, because I really love this, what I saw, this band. It was a five-piece, two longtime friends from California, grew up together as kids, the guitar player and the singer, and you could just see a real special. You know, you know those partnerships where each one just keeps the other always sharp and always coming up with new stuff.
They just seem like they were meant to be.
Yeah, and I love that. There's a beauty in those partnerships. Let's play a song from Foxygen.
Your daughter the other day, well, that was weird. She had rhinoceros-shaped earrings in her ears. But, hey man, have a soda, it's on the house. Remember what I told you about the rooms inside this house? But you don't love me, that's news to me. That's news to me. That's news to us.
So one thing, when I watched Foxygen, one of the cool things, this is really geeky, but the guitar player did something that I thought was really cool, which is he strapped his pedals onto the front of his guitar with duct tape. So instead of like having to do foot stuff and turning knobs with his toes or whatever you might, or reaching down really is what most guitar players do when they play guitar and they need to change their effect on the pedal.
Yeah.
He had it like right there for him.
Wow.
And I thought that was kind of like smart, like, you know, 20 cent solution to a
20 cent solution.
We all need those, right? Did you guys feel any sense of trendy stuff, like anything in particular that you saw more than you expected to see? For me, like, I saw a lot of bands trying to be dance bands. It didn't seem like they kind of were dance bands. That was the one standout for me. A lot of four on the floor things from bands that kind of were rock bands, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know if there was anything that came out to you that either surprised you or you saw a couple of times and thought, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, I really think, like, punk rock's coming back, you know? I think that, like, the reverb scene is dying down a bit and, like, just straight-up punk.
We all were at the Mets show. I love our names, by the way. Boiling Black and Slaughter, or, you know, like some mob.
Boiling Black and Slaughter coming to a town near you.
That's right.
Mets was unbelievable. They were kind of, like, refused. They had that melodic sense that, you know, made you connect with them, but they were still like punk rock and hard, and you know, they were lit up like from the floor up, so they kind of you know, looked.
Yeah, I don't think there was any colored lights. It was all just the spotlights and strobing. And,
yeah, you saw like the shadows of their faces while they're screaming your face off.
And they never stopped moving.
Oh yeah.
I think Mets is one of the hottest bands from this year's stands. I think everyone was talking about Mets.
M-E-T-Z, they're from
Toronto. They're from Toronto, I think, and they just came out with their self-titled on Sub Pop, I think, last week.
We put a song of theirs on All Songs Considered about 3 weeks ago. Robin Hilton picked them, and I was like, whoa, who are these people? So they were on my must-see list.
The thing that was really impressive to me about them is that they didn't seem like they were taking cues from traditional punk bands. I didn't feel like I was seeing a punk band, but it felt like it. There was a lot of very angular guitars, very interesting rhythms that I don't think I've seen in a few punk bands, but the energy was totally punk, and they came out, like, none of them were wearing black. They're all very nicely dressed, and the guitar player was doing all kinds of very interesting things. There's a point where he was playing the strings behind the nut, which if you're not a guitar player, that doesn't make sense. But basically, the where the strings start, there's a nut that gets behind the tuners, and he was playing the guitar from behind the nut, right where the tuners are, and it has this very crackly, chandelier-esque sound.
It's a place where Sonic Youth came from in so many ways.
Exactly, but it felt like a Sonic Youth type.
Even though without sounding at all like, it didn't sound like them, but the spirit was there, right?
Yeah, like the youth culture. I mean, what I loved about that show was that there was a mosh pit, which is so hard to find at CMJ.
They were unstoppable. So let's listen to something from that.
Reminded me of a lightning bolt show almost.
Yeah. And the thing that I really liked about the mosh pit too is it was people that looked like they wouldn't usually be moshing. There was no one, you know, that looked like they had moshed before. I was with another music director, well, a few music directors, and he took off his jacket and gave it to his promotions manager, and he went completely, you know, nice dressed up guy, and he went out into the pit and came back 20 minutes later just drenched in sweat. Just that was the greatest thing ever.
There's one very tall guy with a lot more hair than even you.
He was in the front row.
I wound up seeing him an awful lot at shows.
I saw this band at Spike Hill, which
Spike Hill's in Brooklyn. So let's just tell people real quickly, because we haven't set this up yet, which CMJ happens sort of the Lower East Side of Manhattan, though a little scattered out and about. And then across the bridge, and then you're in Brooklyn, and there are a bunch of places in Brooklyn. So sometimes you have to sort of commit yourself to maybe a showcase of a label, or if you're lucky enough or have an expense account, you can take a lot of cabs and get around, which is how I managed to wind up seeing a lot of things, because I want to get from place to place. Which did you guys do? Did you tend to stay in one place?
I usually tended to stay. But when I went to see Brick and Mortar, I just went there for the band, and then went back to Manhattan.
But Brick and Mortar?
Yeah, Brick and Mortar are two guys that make a lot of noise on stage. A drummer and a bass player for the most part. Sometimes he plays guitar. And he's got a really interesting vocal that's almost like a reggae-style vocal. Huh. But they come from that kind of hard rock category. I remember right before they played one song, they go, take the bass and turn it all the way up to the sound guy. And I'm like, okay, so this is going to be this kind of show.
How'd it feel?
It felt great. I mean, usually I hate that because I'm worried about my hearing, but, you know, you got to let that go sometimes.
That is a constant issue with these shows, and I talk about this maybe too often on All Songs Considered, but the volume level in the past few years has gone out of control, and I think anybody who goes to any of these shows should come in with a pair of earplugs of some sort and be prepared to use them. Really deep bass at a lot of shows, and shrilly screeching highs, and man, we all care about our hearing, so... Do you ever wear plugs?
Never. Or
you never wear plugs?
Never?
I never remember them, and then,
I never
too many
wearing...
Dinosaur Jr. concerts in the front row. Yeah. It doesn't matter to me anymore.
And maybe that's okay. I mean, no, I'm not going to say maybe that's okay. I'd say just watch out. But you care about that stuff.
One day.
Yeah. Well, I went for more years than you're alive not putting plugs in my ears, so I'm one to talk. But honestly, I think the level has just gone up so much. Be careful. With that in mind, let's listen to something from Brick and Mortar. Thank you.
Walk like a ghost, let your feet off the ground. Heart needs sound, sound needs love, love needs you. I'm gonna make it anyway. I know, but really I just don't care. I think I'm gonna make it anyway. I know the things that I just can't say. I think I'm gonna say them anyway. I know, I think I finally found my way. I think I'm gonna make it today. Your name, use it now. Please come back around. Sound needs love, love needs you. I know I'm never gonna make it anyway. I think I'm gonna make it anyway.
You know, of all the bands that were guitar, bass, and drum bands, which is a lot of what we've talked about so far, and I love those kind of bands. They're the core of what I love. You know, they're the core of music that I like, is usually guitar and drum bass music. But sometimes I get frustrated seeing three or four dudes on the stage playing loud music, you know, that you can't understand the words. And yeah. And that happened a lot to me at CMJ. And then Friday night, somebody suggested I go to the show by a group called People Get Ready. And he said, just come. And it was at a space I'd never been to before. It was like New York Live Arts. And when I got there, it was a big black box theater. The setup was probably maybe 600 square feet of a wooden-looking floor. And on either side, so separated by, like, let's say, 100 feet, on the left-hand side were keyboards sitting on the floor. On the right-hand side were some guitar amps. Actually, there were some guitar amps on the left side. But on the right-hand side was a drum set, but it was all on the floor. Mm-hmm. Right, with just the little legs lifting it up enough so if somebody sat in front of their drum kit, they could play it, mm-hmm. And some guitars. It was a performance piece by this group called People Get Ready. They were the dancers, they were the players, and it was one of the most magical performance music pieces I've ever seen in my entire life. It's nearly indescribable, but I'll do my best, which is... Like, one piece was a guy with a guitar strapped around his body, so it was dangling down on the floor, so the neck was pointing to the floor. It was wireless, so his amp was 50 feet away from him, but somebody was at the amp controlling the volume. And he would dance along the floor with the neck of the guitar bouncing on the floor, and it was tuned in such a way that it would make these beautiful, beautiful sounds. It would fill the room, and the guy was controlling the feedback. And he did this gorgeous dance, and it was just... So sonically, it was amazing. The flooring was made of this really thin material. Well, imagine a piece of flooring that's 10 feet long, about 4 feet wide, that's really thin, so you could pick it up and it would bend over your head. And these guys would actually take the flooring and they'd wobble it up and down, and it would make this incredible sound. They had these shotgun mics pointing at the wood of these flooring things, and they'd amplify the sound of these things bending and crashing and feed back the sounds of these things crashing. And all of it was musical. All of it was part of the music that this band was, People Get Ready, were making. I'm telling you, they crawled under the floor and the floor would lift. And just at every turn, it was like, thank God people are thinking outside of that box of guitar and bass and drums.
Were they a touring band?
They are a touring band who do a regular sort of stage rock act kind of thing. They're called People Get Ready, and they have a new record out. But they've done a residency for the past 2 months, I think, on Rikers Island, and then came to this performance space and set this thing up. And this will be over by the time you hear this podcast, but there is one show tonight, and if either of you get there, do it. Let's play some music from People Get Ready.
We'll be right back.
Were they dressed up in any sort of weird thing, or were they all
dressed up?
They were
totally sort of street clothes. It didn't feel pretentious in the way sometimes dance, choreographed dance can feel that way to me in rock music.
Because I imagine them wearing like all black togas, and the fact they're wearing street clothes really is sort of cool.
Yep, they really are onto something special. Let's people get ready. And so let's talk about other things that we saw that maybe stretched an envelope some, or maybe was a little less usual than guitar, bass, and drums. Anybody?
Yeah, I mean, I walked into the show last night on a whim. I didn't know what I was going to see, and I saw this band setting up, and they had a sitar and a keytar, and this guy was dressed head to toe in like this like white robe.
Should we explain what a keytar is for those who don't know? You think everybody knows what a keytar is?
It might be the best instrument around.
It's a keyboard that has a little thing on it. It has kind of a neck. You strap around the keyboard, basically, around your body.
Yeah, like a guitar, but...
Right.
But a keyboard. It's such a ridiculous instrument, really.
It's very Jan Hammer.
Yeah, Jan Hammer was definitely the proponent of the keytar. Maybe even killed it for people, too, for all I know. Sorry,
Jan. Rocket's name has killed nothing, Bob.
But they were this band called Jinja Safari, and really great harmonies and percussion, and a total pop sensibility, like a Vampire Weekend or an Animal Collective with different noises, but more pop. Really kind of very melodic and not intrusive, but then it got really psychedelic and loud at times. They were a really interesting band to watch.
How do you spell the name?
J-I-N-J-A Safari.
Okay, cool. Let's hear some.
Scared of losing you, and all that you spoke of and cared for too. I came to face a sudden death, and I heard your name in a final breath. Knocking at my door, no room for no more. Land of ideals, the brighter the soap is. If the washing machine's stagnant, so then the load is.
So you saw this band where?
A cake shop.
That's a little, it literally is a cake shop for those who've never been there. And then you go downstairs into what is basically a tunnel that they call a club. I'm not dissing cake club, but it is cake shop, but it is small.
It is a dive. It is a small dive, but you can get coffee and tea and cake.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because they sell records there. You can buy records.
That's right, you can.
Like right across from the counter, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. And these guys are from?
They're from Sydney, Australia. Really interesting.
Cool. I this is the fun part. The thing about CMJ, which, like South by Southwest, but that is unlike most music festivals, is we all have a singular experience. The bands you saw, the intersection between what we saw together is not much. And you'll walk away with a whole bunch of stuff. I never even heard of these folks, and they meant something to you. And I love that about CMJ.
Me neither. I stumbled upon them, which is the other thing I love about CMJ, is you could just... see great things without having any plan.
And the nice thing is maybe you go for one band, but you see a band before or a band after, because, I mean, there's always five bands playing every show, for better or for worse, right?
I saw a band that had, I guess, in a way, Vampire Weekend maybe is a spark for either of these bands, or maybe not, but certainly from the point of view that there's an African influence in the band you mentioned, right? And I assume that's what you meant when you say they're a little like Vampire Weekend. I take that pop sensibility with a little bit of a... Would that be at all?
Yeah, it was like that.
So the band I saw, who we'd actually premiered a video on All Songs Considered on our blog not long ago, was called Brainstorm. And so they were a band I was really hot to see. I couldn't wait. And I went down again into another little dive called the Lit Club. And I was the only person besides the band. But they were fantastic. It's a trio. They have the guitar player has that kind of high life African style guitar, that kind of happy, melodic
bright,
kind of
shimmering.
Except what he does, instead of quite bright shimmering, he takes that same melodic kind of idea and distorts it really heavily. So it's very gritty. It's the opposite of that pretty shine. But the melodic stuff is the same, and it's really cool. And the drumming is amazing. Bass player is wonderful. Good singing. Let's listen to some Brainstorm. So Brainstorm's a band out of Portland, one of my absolute highlights for CMJ. I'm so glad to have seen them. They weren't a complete discovery because I knew about them, but I love that moment that happens when you like somebody who's recording you heard, and then you see them and it confirms instead of saying, oh, it's trickery, or they're just good in the studio, or God knows how long it took to make them actually sound good. You actually see them, and you know it's in them to be good. And I felt that about Brainstorm.
So I saw Mac DeMarco at Webster Hall.
Oh, what'd you think?
Part of a big showcase. And it really, I know we have a little bit of differing opinions here.
I said, what do you think?
Full knowing both of our opinions here. I thought, for me, it was the absolute highlight of CMJ, because there's something, and I think for me...
Well, it's really been nice having you as a guest on this show. No, I'm just kidding.
This is where Slaughter and Boilers duke it out. For me, I think the takeaway for me was authentic guitar-driven bands with sort of this something so basic about them, but so authentic that really makes them... adorable, right? And Mac DeMarco is such an interesting sound to me, because he's halfway in between, people say he's halfway in between Real Estate and Kurt Vile.
Wow.
So he's got
you
all
see the
this.
Same person?
Well, you went to a different show than I did.
I did.
So there is a chance, you know, because these bands are playing 6 or 8 shows, and some bands are playing, you know, and he was playing 2 shows a night. So sometimes you get really lucky and you catch that one show that's just...
Well, maybe you did, and maybe I didn't.
Just hit it. Because it was great, you know. His guitar is very classy and sort of a little bit jazzy almost, with sort of his chord choice. But he still has a lot of the guitar riffs of a band like Real Estate. But his vocals aren't washed out in reverb. And
that's
he's got
right.
this very upfront croon about him. He's got a big gap in his teeth. You know, he comes out looking like he hasn't taken a shower. His band looks like...
And that's a plus for you.
Yeah, we were talking about authenticity.
That's right, yeah.
And his band comes out, and they all look like they might have come just from a shipping train yard or something. And, you know, the guitars look sort of patched together. They have duct tape on them.
All true.
And you see him, and he starts playing these really croony, like, soft, mellow-esque songs, and he had this really interesting stage banter. He wrote a song for his girlfriend named Kiki, I believe, and she was in the crowd, and he comes out in the crowd and starts singing right in front of her. And so everyone's around them, and he's singing to his girlfriend, who he takes on tour with him, and she sells merch. and he's singing to her this song.
That's awesome.
And then they start kissing, like, in the crowd, and then he goes back up on stage. And then two songs later, he jumps out onto the crowd and crowd surfs and then comes back. He was almost such a child having fun. Because no one looks like they're having fun with CMJ when you're a band because you're playing six shows a night.
Let's listen to some Mac DeMarco.
Ode to Viceroy is the real standout track that I think displays everything
great
that I'm talking about from the record.
DeMarco, he's from where again?
Canada? DeMarco, Canada.
Yeah, yeah, so big place, but somewhere up there.
Yeah.
I've been doing a number of blog posts, and you can go back and look at those or the things that I highlighted over time. So I'm not going to go through everything that I loved at CMJ, but you can look at the All Songs blog, npr.org/allsongs. And there's photos there. That's up online. Let's quickly just go through a list of, like, because we mentioned about 9 or 10 things here. Let's go through and just mention things we saw. Twerps,
love them. Jangly guitar band from Australia. Sort of remind me of Flying Nun Records.
Yeah, they do have that.
What for those people who don't know Flying Nun?
New Zealand record label, I believe, in the 80s. They had bands like The Clean and The Verlaines.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and they had a very specific kind of, like, psych sound.
They're sort of the influence for Pavement, I feel like. And Twerps is sort of Flying Nuns meets sort of Velvet Underground.
Yeah, I mean, I heard them, and I was like, that's a garage psych band from that era. And then they were, like, 20-year-old kids from Australia, I found out afterwards.
Speaking of young kids, did you see the Orwells?
I miss them.
I miss them, too, and I heard so many great things.
I met them. They blow my mind because they're all in high school.
Yeah.
And they had to talk to their principals and their teachers to convince them to let them go out for CMJ.
Oh, my goodness.
Really?
Yeah.
They had to get permission from their teachers?
And, like, they had to get permission from their parents because two of them are under 18,
That's
I believe.
Awesome. That's
two
awesome.
Of them are 17, and the rest are, like, 18.
Where are they from?
19. Chicago.
Yeah.
Wow. That's funny.
You got a good one?
I saw Pretty and Nice.
What's it?
They're a band from Boston, and they kind of are, like, an indie prog, but, like, with a 90s pop feel.
XTC, very XTC.
Ooh.
Lots of changes. Like, they move around, but
a lot
then
of weird
they,
faces. Did they make weird faces?
Oh, yeah, he had the Ween face. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen Aaron Freeman's face from Ween when he sings, but he's got the big eyes. You know, it's like bam. I thought that they were a really tight, great groove. As soon as they kind of hit a groove, I feel like then they changed what they were doing.
It was very start-stop.
Yeah.
In pop format, which was interesting to see.
Dive. Yeah. Anybody see Dive? D-I-I-V, I wrote about them. They're guitar-based, television-y sounding. I keep
very
referring
dream
pop, them. Yeah, yeah.
Cocteau Twins, maybe a little bit.
In the little bit that I saw, but maybe so.
Saw King Tuff.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen him before, but he was actually mixed well this time, which was great. Very glammy garage rock. He has a sort of very high-pitched, tinny voice. You know, he has songs called Alone and Stoned and... very, you know, comes on with, you know, football jersey and a cap and long hair and swamp, kitsch, sort of that hunks in his punks type vibe, but maybe a little bit harder, a little bit more rock and roll. Everyone in the band has mustaches and denim coats.
Yeah, they kind of look like Jeff the Brotherhood.
Yeah, they look like Jeff the Brotherhood. Jeff the Brotherhood was a little bit weirder, maybe, like a little bit more glammy.
I saw a band called You Won't. It was another one of those where there were only 110 people in the room. It was, you know, 2 o'clock at the Bowery Ballrooms, but every single person there knew this band inside out, and I love that when that happens. And the duo came out at a bunch of their concert right in the middle, and
especially at CMJ, you know, because so many people are seeing bands they've never seen.
That's right. Yeah,
to see, that's really special.
So I star rate all the songs before I go to CMJ of like 400 or 500 songs that I listen to, and both of those got 1-star ratings. And so that was one of those cases where I didn't really like the recordings I heard. I didn't have the context or whatever it was, so right off didn't like it. But when I saw them, I really did like them a lot. They call it You Won't. And then 100 Waters, which was a group I didn't know anything about that many people told me about. And I went in there, and I was really enjoying the music when it was over. I turned around, and Peter Silverman from the Antlers was there. He's a big fan of the band. They're a New York band who... appeals to other musicians, but they also appeal to my heart of like doing kind of prog rock and really intricate, interesting sounds. Maybe we'll go out on that band because we never played 100 Waters, so maybe that's a good place to end. You guys didn't see them, right? So maybe we'll go out on that. Thor Slaughter, right? Thank you, man.
Thank you very much.
The moment and to the end.
From the moment I bugged you to the moment you got me into a church.
It was awesome to meet you, Emmy.
Great meeting you.
Yeah, yeah. And thanks for turning me on to a bunch of stuff. We had some good shows together. That was fun.
It was a great CMJ.
Yay, CMJ.
2012. See you next year.
2013. Right here.
Sweet.